This program, In Case of Emergency, Break Glass, is read for you by the author, Dr. Mary Kelly. Mary is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy and served 21 years on active duty in the Navy. Mary earned a PhD in economics, and she has taught at both the Naval Academy and the Air Force Academy. She is the author of several books, including 360 Degrees of Leadership, Steering Around the Icebergs, Master Your World, 10 Dog-Inspired Lessons to Improve Productivity, Profits, and Communication, and Stop the Barking, Get What You Want from the People Around You So They Win. Mary is passionate about helping people get the important legal documents in their life organized, just in case something happens. This CD is the audio version of her keynote, In Case of Emergency, Break Glass, and is modified slightly for the audio listener. It should be noted that this program is not to be construed as legal or financial advice. Mary encourages people to engage the help of a qualified financial advisor and an estate planning lawyer.
It was August of 2006. I was 6 months away from retiring out of the Navy. My husband and I had a house in Hawaii, and that was where my dog was, that was where my next job at the university was, and that's where our life was. My last tour in the Navy was at the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, teaching. My husband called me one of those days and said, "My back hurts." I said, "Well, with your career field being a Force Recon Marine, your back has always hurt, but maybe you should get it checked out." And he did. And a few weeks later, he called me back and said that he had cancer. He lasted 55 more days. So I got back on a plane and flew to Hawaii. It was a very fast-moving multiple myeloma cancer, and he had already been taken to the intensive care unit. The phone call came, and then he felt bad, and then it seemed like he was gone. We were military people, and what we do in cases of crisis is to make a plan. So we had talked about the plans that we intended to make in case his cancer did not get better. And as I sat in the intensive care unit, I had a yellow legal pad on my lap, and I made notes of what to do just in case. And I called that my oh sugar list, because if things did not get better, and it did not, I was going to need that list. So 55 after his diagnosis, he was gone. I had affairs to settle in Hawaii. I had to take care of the house. I had billing to do. I had to pack things up, and I had to get rid of a lot of our possessions. Like I said, I was 6 months away from retiring out of the Navy, but I had to get back to my teaching job. So I only had about 6 weeks to pack up my house, settle everything, get everything shipped out, and deal with all of the details necessary when someone passes. And I'll tell you, for someone who is prepared for this, even with my background, and I knew I was luckier than most with my background, it was hard. It knocked me down. So when I got back, I sat down with some of my women friends, and I said, "Okay, let's talk about what happens if something happens to you." And this is not something, folks, that most people want to discuss, and I understand that, which is why I think it is so important for us to be discussing it now. And one of my girlfriends is single, never married. One was divorced, and one is on her second marriage. And I said, "Okay, ladies, are you folks ready? What if something happens?" And all of them have responsibilities. They've got dogs or horses or children, but they've all got responsibilities. And I asked them, what would happen if something happened to you, if you got hit by a natural disaster, a disease, or hit by a bus and simply didn't make it home tonight? What would happen to your dog, your house, your horse, your spouse? My divorced friend said, "I don't want to think about making a will." And why do you think she said she didn't want to think about making a will? Right. She says that if she makes a will, then she's going to, you guessed it, die. So when I ask an audience that question, everyone shouts out the answer, die. And so I laugh and I say, but how else are we going to move past where we are right now? It's going to be real hard to get out of this life with or without a will. But without a will, it makes it much more difficult on the people left behind. So there's all kinds of reasons that people don't want to make a will. And there's all kinds of reasons that people don't want to talk about what happens to them in case something tragic does happen. And by something tragic, I'm not necessarily talking about dying, but I am talking about instances where maybe a flood comes, maybe there's a fire in your neighborhood, maybe there's a natural disaster, or maybe someone else in your family falls ill and you have to fly out and go take care of them, but someone has to take care of your responsibilities at home. So when I got my girlfriends together, I said, okay, I really want you all to get all of your important paperwork organized. So I went to Staples or Office Depot or one of those places, and I made binders for them. I got tabbed folders, I got out my label maker, and for those of you who have my manual with the binders, those are exactly the same tabs that I made with my label maker for my girlfriends. And I had a dinner party, and I sat everyone down at the dinner party, and I gave them the binders. I said, please fill them out. Nothing happened. I said, okay. A few weeks later, I took all the binders back, and I wrote out instructions. Like I said, I was in the military. I'm good at writing instructions, and I like telling people what to do. So I wrote out instructions, gave them back the binders. You guessed it. Nothing happened. Okay. So now I was vexed and a little concerned, and I said, okay, because I'm the executor of one of those people's stuff, and I wanted to make sure that my instructions were clear, I took the binders back one more time, and I wrote out forms. Forms worked. So what I did then is I had the binders with the instructions and the forms, and I had everybody back over for a dinner party, and we sat down, and I put the binders at everybody's plate, and I put a bottle of wine by everybody's plate, and I said, okay, nobody leaves until the wine is gone and the binders are done, and everybody gets to spend the night. So we talked about a lot of things that night that most people don't talk about at dinner parties. When was the last time you had a dinner party and said, let's talk about planning my funeral? People generally have 6 months to a year to plan a wedding. People generally only have 3 to 4 days to plan a funeral, and many of the same components apply to both. You have a large group of people that you're presumably going to feed. There's probably a large venue. There's definitely a ceremony involved, but the difference is with a funeral, there are people who are frequently guessing at what it is you want instead of you making the decisions. So planning is helpful. So we sat down at the dinner party. Everyone fills out the forms. I'm happy. They're happy. And then I took it a step further. For their birthday presents that year, I made appointments with them with estate planning lawyers. And so I invited them to lunch. And on the way to lunch, we went by the estate planning attorney where they were able to figure out and plan their will and their trust. I know it's very sneaky, but they got it done. I can't do that personally for every single person listening to this CD, but it worked for my friends. So I'd like to find out how people are doing. And if you're thinking about trying to broach this as a topic with family members or friends or other people, on my website, which is www.organizeyou.com, there is an interactive quiz. And if you think you're doing really well, take the quiz, and if you are doing great, you absolutely don't need anything else. You're great. But if not, if you're wondering about it, it might be fun just to take the interactive quiz. No obligation, no personal information, no anything like that. And let's just go through that. So if you do have this done, give yourself a point. Number one, I have a will and other people know where to find it. If you have a will and other people know where to find it, give yourself a point. If you have a will, but no one knows where to find it, you get no point. Number two, in case of an emergency or an evacuation, I can grab all of my important papers in less than 1 minute. I know, less than 1 minute. So many people say, well, I have an office, or I have a file cabinet, or I have a desk drawer. And ladies and gentlemen, that's fantastic, except in case of an emergency, you don't want people having to spend hours and hours in your house going through needless paperwork to find the documentation they need. Number three, I have a designated personal representative who knows my burial and memorial service wishes. That's a hard one. Many people, many parents tell me, oh, my kids know what I want. And folks, I'm here to tell you, your kids do not know what you want. Until I went through this process with my friends, I never raised this topic with my own parents. I knew that they had some kind of burial plot somewhere, but I wasn't sure exactly where it was, and I wasn't sure how I was going to find it when I needed it. So this was also helpful for me and my family. Number four, if something happened right now to you in the parking lot or today coming home from the grocery store, is there any way for someone to know who to call? So this is a hard one. If I'm the first person on the scene, what am I going to do? Well, we call 911, but what can many people do? On your cell phones, ladies and gentlemen, many emergency services recognize ICE, ICE, and it stands for in case of emergency. And the person that you want called in case something happens to you, in case of an emergency, should be listed there by their name and number. That is the first place emergency personnel are going to look for someone to call. Number five, my pets are provided for in my will or my trust. Now, I am not saying that some of you should do what some celebrities have done, which is to leave millions of dollars to their pet chihuahua. I am not saying that. However, there are going to be people who are either going to fight over your dog or cat or parrot or ferret or turtle or whatever, or there are people who are not going to want your pet. And your beloved pet could wind up in a shelter or a humane society or worse. So, making sure that your pets are provided for in your will or your trust is important. You want to make sure that if your dog gets sick, they get good care. If they get some kind of disease or if they need special medication, you want to make sure frequently that there's some monetary figure that goes along with care for your pets. If you have not provided for them, they could wind up in a situation that is not what you want. Next, I have updated my will and or trust within the past 3 years. Now, many of us have a will, but it hasn't been updated in many years. Some of us update the will when the children are born, and we don't think about that until our own children are having children of their own. Next, all of my insurance papers are in one area, and my personal representative knows where to find them. This is a difficult topic because many times you're employed and your insurance coverage changes companies. So the company number or the health insurance or the life insurance company that you originally signed up with when you first went to work for that company may have changed, and it may have changed several times over the course of your employment at that company. So just because you signed on in 1983 with one company, it now may be a completely different company, and when you're retired, it could be even different companies. So keeping those insurance papers updated and knowing what those numbers are is really important. Next, my wishes on organ donation are written down and well known to my family and friends. Now, just a word on organ donation. I realize that that makes a lot of people very uncomfortable. Some people feel, I'm gone, it doesn't matter, it would be wonderful to help other people. I personally feel the same way. I feel like I have lovely blue eyes and people are always commenting on how they sparkle and it would be a shame to see those go to waste. However, some people are more comfortable with internal organ donations such as liver or kidneys or a heart, but they don't like to think of eyes or skin or something else. So please make that clear to your family and friends so that they know what it is they can then, in good conscience, donate to someone else who needs that. All right. And next, I have a healthcare power of attorney. We're going to go through the difference between a healthcare power of attorney, a proxy, and a living will. And the reason for this is in 1999, there was a law passed called HIPAA that makes it more difficult for people to find out personal information about you. But what it also does is it makes it more difficult for people who are trying to act on your behalf to take action for you in a healthcare situation. So we're going to go into more detail on that as well. And 10, I have a letter of instruction which details what should happen in the day-to-day operation of my life and lets a perfect stranger know what to do in case I am unable to take care of my responsibilities. So if you did really well on that, you probably don't need any more help or any more advice on this. But if you don't, you might want to just keep listening. So today, one of the things you can do, ladies and gentlemen, tonight, today, going home, sitting at a table with your friends, maybe at your next dinner party or family gathering, is to draft out a letter of instruction. And this is the first chapter of the manual that some of you might have. Let me explain what that is. This is a letter that you write out. You can write it out on the computer. You can write out on a piece of paper, a legal pad. It doesn't matter. Because it's not a legal document, it does not need to be notarized or legalized or in any way associated with a lawyer. So it's something you can do right away. And what are the things you put into a letter of instruction? First is who to call in case something bad happens to you. So for the people who have me listed as their personal representative, my family or whoever, they have this manual, and on the back in a big black Sharpie, they wrote, call Mary and here is her number. And they list all my numbers on that as well as my email address. So there is no doubt at all, they know exactly who to call. So in that letter of instruction, you need to provide information because I may be out of town, I may be traveling, I may be somewhere else. And if I have to take action right away, it would be easiest for me if I had that letter of instruction wherever I am. So if you're living in Cleveland and I live in New York City, I don't live in New York City, but let's just say, and I have that letter of instruction in my hand along with the list of all of your contacts, then I know exactly who to start calling and what to start to do. So a letter of instruction is not a legal document, but it is very helpful. It assists your personal representative or trustee in taking care of matters concerning your welfare and your estate by giving them information that may or may not be easily found in other places. Because it is not a legal document, it does not need to be probated or go through any legal procedure before taking any kind of action. A letter of instruction is not a protected document, which means that you can and should give it to your trusted representative immediately so that they know and accept their responsibilities and understand your wishes. If you have a will with a lawyer or it's in a safe deposit box, it can be difficult to find if your trusted representative doesn't know who to contact or where to look. So for example, if I want my sister to be my personal representative, I'm going to draft a letter to her, first off, making sure that she understands that she is my personal representative. And I want to make sure before I write this letter specifically to her that she is willing to accept those responsibilities. So, small side note, after I went through my situation with my husband, I contacted my siblings and my close friends, and I said, oh, by the way, if I am the person that you want responsible for all of your effects, I'm the executor of your will, your trust, your personal representative, if I'm in any way involved with taking care of your stuff or being responsible for your pets or your children, please let me know. I think that's really good information for people to know if you're going to trust them with your estate, your children, whatever. It's important. Don't put anything in the letter of instruction that conflicts with your will, because the will take precedence. You cannot, in a letter of instruction, will belongings to anyone else. Now, you can remind your trustee that the dishes that you have in storage are a different set of dishes, and that might go to your sister Thelma. And oh, by the way, remember that there's a storage unit. That's okay, but you can't will something to someone in just a letter of instruction. And we're going to get more on how to will things in the will section. A letter of instruction, like I said, is something that you can handwrite, dictate, or type out on a computer. Because the letter of instruction is not a legal document, it is easy to change and easy to send to the person who will likely be the one to handle your estate. If you're married, it is helpful to write out a letter of instruction so that the wishes of each partner are clear. A crisis should not be a time to wonder. Confusion arises when perhaps a relative thinks that they are the personal representative or the legal guardian, when in fact they are not. I had a situation come up recently where the sister-in-law was named as the executor of the estate. And then those people, that couple got divorced and the woman got married. And now the former sister-in-law was still the executor of the estate. And the current husband, the new husband, wasn't very happy about that at all. But the woman who was the sister-in-law felt that her former sister-in-law was the person she could trust the most. So it's important that to note that sometimes partners are not going to agree on every single detail, but each partner needs their own letter of instruction. Conflicting information between the letter of instruction and the will or the trust invites conflict. Your wishes may be questioned. Being honest, especially with immediate family and close relatives, before a crisis is crucial. It is recommended that you compose a letter of instruction and then mail or email it to the critical people who have a need to know what your wishes are in the event of emergency. I suggest sending it not only to the person who needs to act on your behalf, but also to a few other key people so that they know to call the responsible person right away, such as a neighbor or a friend who might know of the emergency before even immediate family might know. I also recommend printing out a copy of the letter of instruction and keeping it with this workbook or your binder or wherever else you're going to keep all of your important life documents. For example, you might want your brother or your best friend to act as your personal representative, but if they live, like I say, 2,000 or 3,000 miles away, you might want to provide a just-in-case copy of the letter of instruction to your neighbor, a coworker, or someone else who knows you well and would know who to call. When composing a letter of instruction, consider what needs to happen right away for someone else to assume your responsibilities. Things that must happen right away, in no particular order, are 1. Contact certain family members and friends. The list of my contacts is located, fill in the blank. You might want to illustrate where the address book is, if there's a copy of it printed out in your binder, or where your Rolodex is. 2, take care of the children. The person to call for the children is, put in a name and a phone number, or maybe not applicable, or please go to this school, call the principal, here's the teacher. The school is located here, provide the address. Now, there's some cases where an emergency happens, a relative will go to the school, but they may not be on the list of authorized people to pick up the children. This can cause unnecessary delays, so please make sure that that is clarified. 3, the documents that deal with legal guardianship of children are located with the lawyer, in the will, in the safe, in the binder, wherever they're located. 4, take care of dogs, cats, ferrets, parrots, gerbils, turtles, fish, any other pets. The person to call to take care of the pets is, fill in the blank. Specifically note, by the way, when you're making notes on people whom you take care of, children, pets, anyone else you may be a caregiver for, if they need particular medication, and if so, where that medication is and when that needs to be administered. 5, the important legal documents are organized and are located in my binder, in my top right-hand drawer, in my bookshelf, in my file cabinet, with my lawyer whose name is, fill that in. 6, a copy of the will is attached. The original will is located with my lawyer, with my friend, with a safe deposit box, in a safe deposit box, or in this binder. We'll get more into wills as we get into the will section. So, an example of a letter of instruction might read, "Dear Mike, thank you for agreeing to serve as my trustee and personal representative should I die or become incapacitated. Children. My children need to go to my sister in Wisconsin, who is appointed as their legal guardian in our absence. Her name, phone number, and address is blank. The children's medical records are located blank. They currently attend school at blank, and they carpool with blank. Their special needs are blank. Their allergies are blank. Their medications are blank. Until my child's provider can come to get them, please call my neighbor, my friend. The power of attorney for the children is located in the binder under powers of attorney. The medication the children need is in the medicine cabinet in the master bedroom. Maybe under pets, you might write something such as, the dog needs to go to my neighbors, Jack and Terry Terry. Their phone number and address is blank. The cat should go to my friend, Kitty Luttrell in Tennessee, and her phone number is blank. To care for the dog and cat before you turn them over, the dog gets fed 1 cup of kibble under the kitchen sink twice a day, and the cat gets 1 can of moist and meaty in the pantry above the kitchen sink. The animal medical records are in the house, in my office, in the binders with the cat and dog on them. The cat is on anti-seizure medication once a day, which is located in the kitchen desk drawer next to the knives. Hide it in a little piece of wet cat food and she takes it easily. The dog goes to the door when she has to go outside. The cat should never go outside. So that covers children and pets and just some things to think about. Now, another point you might want to include in your letter of instruction is donations. I am an organ donor and am happy to donate all usable organs, including skin and eyes. But again, you should modify that to reflect how you feel and what you want done. Burial. This is where you might want to include just some ideas so that your personal representative knows, but you're going to go into more detail in the memorial instructions later. I wish to be cremated. I want to be buried with my spouse if he/she predeceases me. If not, then I would like to be buried in the family plot in Nebraska at the blank ceremony. I do not already have a prepaid plot. I am a veteran, so I am eligible to be buried in a military cemetery, and I prefer to be buried in blank cemetery with my family. I would like military honors if possible. If my spouse and I go together, then the flag should go to my oldest surviving child. Again, you might want to think about your memorial service just to give your personal representative some things to think about before they get into all of your other paperwork. Memorial service. I would like a memorial held at blank church or synagogue. I would like blank to officiate the service. And other instructions for the memorial service are in my workbook or my binder. Reception. Okay, this is taken exactly out of my letter of instruction, and it reads like this. You know I love a good party, so please plan a nice one at either the country club or my favorite diner. I want people to have a good time, so make sure there are heavy hors d'oeuvres, a good band, and an open bar. So that's taken right out of my letter of instruction. My will and my trust are located in my life binder, my workbook, my file cabinet, wherever yours are located. And my lawyer, include name and phone number, also has a copy. My life binder is located in my home office on the second shelf under the computer. It is labeled, in case of emergency, break glass. Again, it is stipulated in my will, but the dog and the cat need a certain amount from my estate to care for the dog and the cat, as well as the people who have my children get a yearly stipend and an annuity to make sure that happens. So that's a letter of instruction. And it's one of those things that sounds really complicated, but once you start writing it, if you just think about what people would have to do if they showed up at your house today and had to take over your life. What I'd like to do now is then talk about wills and trusts. So let's talk about wills. Depending upon the state that you live in, a will is either extremely important or just very important. My personal thought on wills, ladies and gentlemen, is that if you are able to drive, if you have a driver's license, if you're old enough to drive and old enough to vote, you need a will. In many cities, you can get a will done for free or under $50, and I think it's well worth it. Again, different states have different rules. When I do this talk, if I'm giving the talk in Texas, I talk about Texas rules. If I'm giving the talk in Colorado, I talk about Colorado rules. If I do it in Maryland, Maryland has different rules. So different state rules are very different on what happens to your stuff in case you die without a will. There's a great website called www.mystatewill.com. which shows where things go in case something happens to you, and it's listed by state. It's not my website. I wish I was that clever. It's fantastic. And it's a way to take a look at that. But hopefully none of you will need that because you will all make sure that you have a will. For example, in Texas, Texas has property and estate issues that go back to 1066, like the invasion of Normandy 1066. They base their property rules from that. And the current rules were based on laws as they were in 1922. They got changed again in 1983, but it gets really complicated. And for example, in Texas, there's real property, community property, and then personal property. And it's all accounted for differently. So again, if you don't have a will in the state of Texas, it can be extremely confusing and expensive. So one of the things I want to talk to you about, so let's go back to Texas for a second. For a single person, if you pass, your parents get all your stuff. So that doesn't sound that bad unless you think about, well, maybe you don't live in that state anymore. You might still be a resident or you've got stuff in other places. Now, here's where it gets tricky. Every state recognizes the state wills of another state. So if you live in Nebraska, but your will is done in Nebraska, but you've got property in Texas, they're going to abide by that will that was made in Nebraska. However, if you have a convoluted family situation or property in different states, things become difficult because the will then has to be probated to where it is you are a resident, perhaps where you died. So if you were on vacation in another state, it might have to go through that, or they might have to just know about it with a death certificate. But then it has to be probated through places where you hold property. So this is where it starts to get complicated. If your situation gets complicated, you might want to think about a trust. We're going to get to that. There are many online programs and software programs, all those lawyers in a box type products that are worth probably what you pay for them. I'm not saying they're bad. If you've got a very simple situation and there's no one in your family who is going to contradict anything or create a problem, then that's probably fine. You can get some signatures, get some witnesses, and it's perfectly fine and perfectly legal. But if you think there's going to be a problem, that's where we get into trusts, and you're probably going to need something a little bit more elaborate. So, on wills, everyone needs a will. As a couple, you each get your own will. Some people don't realize that. A will is also public. Once something happens to you, your will gets filed in the court. Court documents are open, which means anyone can go see that. If you're a private person or you just don't want the whole world to know what's going on with your situation, you might want to think about a trust. A trust can come in handy. I love trusts. I think they are a legal protection for most people. And some people are put off by the idea of a trust because they think they're going to be very expensive. So I did a survey of 10 lawyers in 10 different states, and a trust will cost anywhere between about $2,400. This is now 2011 figures, $2,400 to maybe $4,000 or $5,000. So let's just take an average and say $3,500 as an average of a really nice, well-done trust. Many people balk at that figure because they think it's very expensive. And for some people, you know, that could be 5% of your annual income, and that's a lot of money. However, if you have assets and a lawyer has to get involved, an average lawyer fee generally goes between $250 and $350 an hour. So let's just say your lawyer has to work for 10 or 15 hours on your case after you're gone. That's the cost of the trust. And first, it's going to be way more expensive than that. And you're not sure you're going to get what it is you want. In a trust, you make sure that you get what you want. Now, in order to make a trust work, you have to put all of your major assets into the trust. Otherwise, if you miss a bank account, that bank account is now separate from the trust and it has to be treated as a totally separate asset. So with a trust, think go all or nothing. Now, the nice thing about a trust is that if you have a trust, your will becomes a very simple document. The will then goes to court and says, "Hello, court system, I exist. Now, leave everything else alone," because the trust manages the dispersal of assets, which is really, really helpful. They frequently, wills with a trust, because there's really nothing in the will that's going to be up for debate. It sails through probate in various states as well. And it means that it's just a very fast process to probate your will, and things get settled much faster. Keep in mind, folks, the federal government says that within 9 months of someone passing, you have to file estate taxes. And if you're still wrapped around the paperwork, this can go on for years and years and years. And most people who have not been through it don't understand how lengthy these legal systems and processes are. If you don't want a convoluted situation after you're gone and you have assets or property in other states or a complicated family situation, a trust, I think, is a great idea. I have a friend who doesn't make dinner for herself, but she will happily cook hamburgers and steak every night for her dog. I frequently joke that in my next life, I want to come back as her dog. In case something happens to her, I get her dog. And this is where she really didn't want to think about, she's single, and she really didn't want to think about what was going to happen next. But her brother would get everything in case she passed, but he's not a dog person. Now, I would get on a plane from Fiji to go get her dog, of course, but if I'm not the person legally responsible for her dog in her will or her trust, I don't have the legal capability to make sure I get that dog. So once I explained that to her, she went and got her will and trust done right away. For example, if you have 6 grown kids and you only want to leave something for 5, you have to make a note of that in the trust. A good lawyer will ask these questions. Many states also have loopholes where if you haven't specifically mentioned that person as a child or someone they think you probably should have left something to, they're going to go to court. Somebody could go to court and argue that you meant to include that person. They will probably win if you don't have that spelled out. So I just want to ask folks who are listening, if you have children or close friends, what you would do to keep them happily alive. And this is what I mean. When I have large groups of audiences, I frequently have parents in the crowd who would do anything for their children. And I ask them, if your child was lying in a hospital bed and they needed a kidney, and the doctor told you that even if you donated a kidney, that they would only probably have 2 to 3 more good years of living, would you still donate that kidney? Every single person in my audience says, yes, of course we would do that for our child. Yet, there are so many people, 70% of Americans don't have a will. That means 70% of these people are essentially taking away 2 to 3 good years of life for the people they left behind, for their friends and family. I think this is a very difficult thing, and many people don't realize the mess that they leave behind. Laws have changed, things have gotten more complicated. And the standard response I hear is, I won't care because I'll be gone. But that doesn't really help the people left behind. I want to talk a little bit about how communication with wills and trusts keeps families together. And this is what I mean. I have a friend whose mom has, there's 3 daughters, and the mom is about 80 years old, and she left all 3 of her daughters as co-executors and co-personal representatives of everything that she has. And we were having breakfast one day, and I looked at her and I said, this is the worst thing you could do for your children. And she said, well, I want to make it fair. I said, I think it's the worst thing you could do to your children, and here's why. First, all 3 of your daughters live in different states. You live in a different state, which means for them to make any decision, all 3 of them now have to sign paperwork. This logistically is going to be extremely difficult. Second, those 3 ladies cannot agree on where to go to lunch, much less very difficult decisions that deal with your care, your end of life, your memorial, and all of the legal and financial issues. They can't agree on where to go to lunch, and now you're going to put this huge burden on all 3 of them? My advice to you is pick one for each different part of your life if you're trying to be fair. Make one daughter the person who is in charge of, say, your advanced directives, your health care instructions. Make another one in charge of the finances. Make a third responsible for the memorial or your funeral. So let me talk a little bit about advanced directives. Healthcare advance directives also include things like a living will, a medical power of attorney, a DNR, or do not resuscitate. Now, depending upon the state that you live in and the terminology, healthcare directives give your loved ones directions on what kind of end of care or end of life care that you want. Do you want to be resuscitated? Do you want to be on life support systems? If so, how long? I have many friends who are nurses who say they'll take life support, they'll take a feeding tube, but they absolutely do not want dialysis. If you don't want dialysis, say so. So let's break those down. A living will is a part of advance directives. A living will is a written legal document that spells out the types of medical treatment and life-sustaining measures you do or don't want, such as a mechanical breathing tube, respiration, ventilation, tube feeding, or resuscitation. In some states, living wills may be called healthcare declarations or healthcare directives. A medical power of attorney. A medical power of attorney is a legal document that designates a specific individual, that's referred to as your healthcare agent or proxy, to make medical decisions for you in the event that you cannot. So let's say you get pneumonia and you have a breathing tube and you can't talk or can't communicate, or you might be in a coma for a few days. Who is going to make decisions for you? That is the person you name in your medical power of attorney. Now, a medical power of attorney is sometimes called a durable power of attorney for healthcare. However, it is different from a power of attorney authorizing someone to make financial transactions for you. That's completely different. A DNR order. DNR stands for Do Not Resuscitate Order. This is a request to not have CPR given to you in the event that your heart stops or if you stop breathing. Advance directives do not have to have a DNR order, and you don't have to have an advance directive to have a DNR order. Your doctor can put a DNR order in your medical chart if you make that decision, but there has to be something authorizing them to do so. Otherwise, the doctors and the hospitals have a legal obligation to keep you alive as long as possible. So, a healthcare directive states a person's wishes in the event that he or she may not be able to make decisions for themselves or may be close to death, and tells the doctor and the hospital what they want for medical care. Many times the terms are broad, but specific treatments can be listed. For my personal situation, I'm not a big fan of pain. Some of you will laugh at that, but I see absolutely no reason to be in terrible pain if I'm at the end of my life. So one of the questions hospitals sometimes have to ask the family is, do you want to administer pain medication even though it may shorten their life? Think hard about this. For me personally, the answer is yes. I want the pain medication. However, not everyone feels that way. And again, as mentioned earlier in this program, with the passage of HIPAA, the Health Information Privacy Act of 1999, even spouses are sometimes not allowed to act on your behalf without a healthcare power of attorney. That includes discussing medical bills with the hospital. So I just want to tell you a quick story about that because I know I've just been talking about some of these declarations and it can get a little dry. So let me tell you a story. It was about 19 months after my husband passed, and I got a bill for a service, and it was about $12,000. And there were a few problems with the bill. So I called the hospital and I said, are you sure that this is my husband's bill? Oh, yes, ma'am, we're absolutely certain. He had this procedure on this date, this time with this doctor. I said, you're absolutely sure about the date? Oh, yes, ma'am, we're absolutely sure. I said, okay. The problem, of course, is that he has already been dead for over a year. There was a pause on the other end of the line, and they said, oh my, can you please send us the death certificate? I replied that I would be happy to send in the death certificate, but they had a copy of it since it was in their hospital. So sometimes things get a little bit messed up, but a month later, I received the bill from the insurance company about the same event. And so I called the insurance company, and his insurance fell under my insurance at my workplace. He fell under my Social Security for primary healthcare insurance. And when I called them to tell them about this, again, this was about 19 months after he had passed, the insurance company told me that they could not discuss his insurance with me. I asked why. They said because I needed to have a healthcare power of attorney sanctioned, signed by the court, that allowed me as his personal representative to discuss insurance. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I thought that was crazy. It was my insurance. He was my husband. And oh, by the way, 19 months after he passed, it was going to be extremely difficult to get a healthcare power of attorney so that I could discuss a bill that was not ours. So many people think as a spouse, that's the lesson of my story here. Many people think that as a spouse, you have the right to take care of these things automatically. And I'm here to tell you that you just don't. Chapter 4 discusses powers of attorney. Powers of attorney for healthcare, finance, and general purpose are different things. A power of attorney allows other people to make legal decisions on your behalf. You need a healthcare power of attorney. That was the advance directives that we talked about. Your bank may have, by the way, their own financial power of attorney that you can sign at your bank or at your brokerage that allows your representative to manage finances to pay for immediate expenses, such as the funeral, the memorial service, and other immediate household expenses and routine bills. But again, a general financial power of attorney may not cover your own specific bank or brokerage house. So please check with your financial advisor or your banker to make sure you're in compliance with what they need. A general power of attorney allows you to appoint another person to act on your behalf to do things such as sell your car or maybe pay other non-so-emergent bills. Having all of your powers of attorney in one spot, such as attached to Chapter 4, can be very helpful. Chapter 5, Advisors and Other Financial Information. Many people don't realize how important their accountant and their maybe financial advisors are after they pass. Your accountant will need to keep doing your taxes as long as any part of your estate continues to make any money. That means that even if there's $1 in some account somewhere that made interest that year or 5 years after you go, somebody's going to have to file taxes on that interest made, that money made. So one little tip is to tell your financial person, as soon as something happens to me, just in my standard bank accounts, you might want to move that money into a non-interest-bearing account into the bank if you're close to December, because if you roll into that next calendar year, you might have to file taxes for yet another year. So, advisors and other information. Important advisors besides your accountant and your financial advisor is also your automobile information. It would be very helpful if people knew where the copy of the title was of your car, making sure that we are contacting the right doctor in the event that you're incapacitated and we need to contact your primary care physician. You might have an employer or a business partner who might need to be contacted. Are you a landlord or a tenant? We need to find out, or somewhere you need to indicate who your renter is or who you might owe rent to. If you have a special spiritual advisor, a pastor, a priest, a rabbi, a shaman, whoever you so choose for spiritual guidance for you or someone that you want included in maybe last rites or your memorial service, or you want that person to visit you in the hospital, it is helpful to have that person's name and contact information. It's also helpful to know if you're already receiving Social Security and whether or not you are receiving some kind of pension or retirement fund. I want to talk a little bit about, in Chapter 6, a memorial. Now, many people think that planning their own memorial sounds morbid, and there's a couple ways that you can make it easy. First, write down where your funeral should be held if you have a preference. If you have a prepaid plot somewhere, please indicate that. I had a very sad situation where a young man had buried his elderly mother, and he had buried her in New Mexico where she was living. And about 2 years later, he was cleaning out her file cabinet and realized that she had a prepaid plot in Indiana. So now this poor man has a terrible dilemma. What does he do? Does he try to find a way to transport his mother's remains after 2 years across a few state lines so that she can go into the prepaid plot in Indiana? Does he sell the prepaid plot? Does he use it for his own family? What does he do? So, ladies and gentlemen, one of the points that I want to make in this recording is to make sure that you understand that the people that you leave behind only get one shot, one chance to get it right. And if they make a mistake because either your instructions weren't clear or they simply don't know what it is you want, that's something that they have to live with the rest of their life. And that can be very difficult when you're leaving people behind. So in the memorial, I call this the last great party. What do you want? If you have a specific idea for the service, that's important. And one of the easiest ways to do that is as you go to other people's funerals, grab the bulletin, make some pen and ink changes, and put that into chapter 6 where it says memorial instructions. If I had to pick the songs that you wanted, the readings you wanted, the point you wanted made, who to do the eulogy, who you wanted to sing, I would have a very difficult time thinking of that for even my closest family members. So please write that out. Take those other bulletins from other people and modify them for your own use. If you were just to sit down with a blank template of what should happen at maybe your funeral or memorial service, it might be very difficult. But if you've already got someone else's and you thought, oh, that was a really nice reading, or that was a really nice song, or I really liked how that went, or I really want my friends to remember this one point, then it's something that you can just write down on another bulletin and include it in chapter 6. Do you want some kind of reception? My family comes from, well, Ireland a long time ago, so there's a tradition there that has wakes and there's a big celebration. Not everyone feels that way. My personal opinion is I do want a fun reception afterwards. I want to celebrate my life, even if I'm not there to do it. And I, by the way, have this as a stipulation in my trust to make sure that my last great party is paid for. Doesn't that make sense? Doesn't that sound like a nice way to do that? I think it's lovely. Chapter 7 talks about insurance and other important information. Now, let me tell you a story about insurance. In 1972, when my husband first went to Vietnam in the Marine Corps, I was, well, young. I think I was in first grade at the time, and we obviously weren't together then. So he left as beneficiary on his insurance his dad. His dad died, well, about 19 years before he did. So when the insurance company contacted me, they said, I'm sorry, but you're still not the beneficiary. And I was surprised to find out that he had, in 1972, designated the woman that he was dating in 1972 as his secondary beneficiary. My name was nowhere on this list. And it took 2 plane trips and a lot of legal wrangling to get the right paperwork to make sure that she got paid, because again, I had to prove that his dad was already gone. And I did, of course, as his personal representative, I made sure that every piece of legal documentation was taken care of properly. Now, she had the option, according to the insurance company, of sending it back to me. She did not exercise that option. Now, did my husband mean to leave this money to the woman he was dating in 1972? I'm pretty sure not. However, many times people don't double check the beneficiaries. Ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to double check the beneficiaries, if for no other reason that you will make me happy in the event that one of those beneficiaries is not who you intend. So, many times we think that the beneficiaries will just automatically change based on our personal situation, and that's just not true. So again, when you sign up with a company or an insurance policy, maybe in your 20s or 30s or 40s, make sure that that information is still kept up to date on a yearly basis. You just might want to double check that. So, insurance. You've also probably got insurance in places that you don't necessarily think you might. For example, many credit card companies, if something happens to you, pays out a stipend, maybe $1,000 or $5,000, as automatic coverage. Many bank accounts, the day that you pass, have a matching program of a certain percentage. So these are things that are important to know. Now, we talk a little bit about insurance and we talk a little bit about finances in this section. Here's the difference. If you have financial assets, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, IRAs, SEP plans, 401ks, that gets transferred differently than insurance. Insurance gets passed tax-free, and it goes directly to that beneficiary. All of those other assets, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, IRAs, all those things can go into, they go into the estate, they can go into the trust. But again, when your assets are passed to other people, they are taxed. Now, there's two different taxes here. There's the estate tax, which is how much the entire estate gets taxed based on federal law. And then there are inheritance taxes, which is a like a personal income tax based on what you receive from someone else. So for example, your kids might get taxed 4.5% on what you leave to them. Your friends get taxed about 15%. Your siblings get taxed about 12.5%. That's an inheritance tax. That happens after the estate has already been settled and they get their share of whatever it is you so designate. Now, depending upon federal law, and federal law is changing every year, especially now, the average estate tax in the United States is 48%. It can be as high as 55% as of this recording. Now, that's another place, another reason why you might consider a trust, because a trust can bypass certain estate taxes. Again, making sure that you have all of these considerations in place and discuss with your financial advisor is really important. So, as you're collecting all of the important papers of insurance, think about your life insurance, your house insurance, your car insurance, your boat insurance, an umbrella policy, whatever you have, make sure they're all in one place. But you also want to add in other important papers, such as adoption papers, marriage certificates, death certificates, divorce papers, citizenship, maybe your will and your trust. Collect your healthcare power of attorney, your healthcare directive, your general power of attorney, your financial power of attorney, any military documents, such as a DD-214, a military identification card, your Social Security card, the most recent copy of your tax return, W-2s and 1099s, and again, any mortgage or title information that you might have on any of your properties. Speaking of properties, I have a friend who has a tiny acre in the middle of nowhere in Kansas. Now, that property is not worth very much, but I feel very sorry for the person who has to go find that piece of property, find someone who's willing to sell it, and deal with all that once my friend goes. Because it's unmarked land, it's unpaved, there's no electricity, it's hard to find. And the estate cannot be settled until that piece of property is also settled, and it's going to take time. So if you have other real estate or other property or timeshares, make sure that that is annotated under real estate. Let me talk for a minute about individually held stocks and bonds. My grandparents had individual stock certificates in their attic, like a lot of my friends' grandparents in the attic. And I remember even as a child thinking, what happens if the house burns up? What happens to their stocks? And the answer is the stocks simply go away. Thanks to modern technology, most people's financials are in a brokerage house and are much more organized. It is very helpful, by the way, if the people you leave behind only have to deal with one brokerage. Chapter 8, Family, Friends, and Computers. Notifying your friends and family is a tough challenge for people acting on your behalf. One of the reasons this is tough is because many people have electronic databases with all of their friends, family, business associates, acquaintances, and other people they routinely do business with. Not all of those people need to be contacted right away. And if I cannot get into your computer to access your database, it's going to be very difficult for me to know who I should be contacting. Also, there may be family members or friends or other people that you may not want contacted right away. If so, put a note by that. I recommend that people who have online or electronic databases go home and hit the print button. And then at the very top of that, once it's all printed out, go through with a yellow highlighter and highlight the people that you want contacted right away. Highlight in pink the next people in terms of priority. And then at the very top of that whole contact list, you might want to put, call this person right away. They are my personal representative. That makes sure that the right people are contacted quickly. Now, getting into your computers. Google, AOL, Yahoo, and other email accounts have certain rules about what happens if someone passes. In some cases, it's considered part of your personal property. In other cases, they need a death certificate. In still third cases, they continue the email account long after someone's gone. Facebook, MySpace, LinkedIn also have specific rules. It is helpful to know that. Now, because so many people do so much business online, it is helpful to keep a password master list in a safe place. On my website, organize-you.com, there is a downloadable free, of course, password master list. And you can download that, fill in that piece of paper with the website, the site's name, whatever email account you might have used to log into that, the username, the password, and maybe the date. And you can keep that as a list. Then my recommendation is to fold that up, put it in an envelope, and seal the envelope with a piece of tape, and then sign your name across the back of it. You don't want your passwords just floating around for anyone, but in case something happens to you, people should be able to get into your computer, get into your passwords, and pay your online bills, check on your mortgage, and make sure that everything that you need done gets done. So, those are the 8 chapters that I wanted to discuss. And I congratulate you for getting this far in the recording. If you are taking these steps, I just want to thank you for being so considerate to the people left behind. I know for many families, this is a tough challenge. This is frequently a topic that is not discussed at the dinner table, and it is painful for some people to think about, and even more difficult to start organizing their legal documents and their personal effects. However, I do want to assure you that it doesn't take nearly as much time as you might think it does, especially when you have some kind of template, some kind of guidance to go forward and get everything all in one place, all organized and all ready, just in case. Again, thank you so much for listening to this recording and being part of this program. If you have any feedback, I would love to hear from you. My personal email address is mary@productiveleaders.com. Again, that's mary@productiveleaders.com, and I would love to hear from you. Thank you so much again for listening to this recording.
If you want to share this CD, manual, or the binder system with the tabbed folder with family or friends, you can order them by calling area code 719-357-7360 or by logging on to www.organize-you.com. You can also reach Mary directly at mary@productiveleaders.com. If you are associated with a nonprofit and would like to talk to Mary about using this or any of her leadership programs as fundraisers, please contact her by email at mary@productiveleaders.com.